Welcome to Tech and AI Daily. It's Monday, August 3rd, 2026. I'm Alex, joined as always by Sam, and we have a lot to get through today.
We really do. Let's start with the watch list. Four tickers, quick hits.
Starting with the ugly one, SOXL, the 3x leveraged semiconductor ETF, dropped 6.89% today, settling at $106.82. That snapback rally from last week? Largely gone.
Yeah, the chip sector rout is not over. Last week felt like a recovery. This week is reminding everyone that leveraged ETFs can give it all back fast. Semis remain under real pressure.
Meanwhile, QQQ, the NASDAQ 100, edged up 0.72% to $692.95, and VUG, Vanguard's growth fund, rose 1.43% to $86.42. So broad, big tech, and growth are actually doing fine.
Which tells you the market is making a distinction. Chips are struggling, but hyperscalers and software names are getting a bid. Middle East de-escalation hopes are part of the story, but the bigger driver is that all four major cloud AI hyperscalers just reported earnings and beat, with bullish AI capex guidance across the board. That is the fundamental floor holding QQQ up.
And VGT, Vanguard Information Tech, captures that tension perfectly. It was nearly flat, up just 0.36% to $113.56, because its heavy semiconductor weighting dragged it down, even as software and cloud names rallied. Intratech divergence in one ETF.
Great snapshot. Chips down hard, software and hyperscalers up, and the AI spending narrative is very much intact. Okay, let's spend the rest of the news block on AI because there is a lot happening.
Starting in China, Alibaba released Qwen 3.8 Max today, and they are not being shy about it. They're calling it the world's most capable open-weight model, claiming it benchmarks against the best closed frontier systems from OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google.
Open weight meaning anyone can download and run the weights. That's a big deal. Closed labs have been able to stay ahead partly because their best models aren't accessible, but the gap keeps shrinking. If Qwen 3.8 Max holds up under independent benchmarking, that's a genuine challenge to U.S. AI dominance, and it's free to use.
The U.S.-China open weights race is accelerating, and Alibaba is clearly not sitting out. We'll be watching how the frontier labs respond. Moving on, there's a story today that honestly stopped me cold.
The CVE one.
A vulnerability in SQLite, a vulnerability that does not exist, was invented by a large language model, and it was formally assigned a CVE number. CVE stands for Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures, which is the official global registry that security engineers worldwide use to track real threats.
So, an LLM hallucinated a bug. That hallucination made it into official security infrastructure, and now engineers everywhere might see it and act on it. That's not a hypothetical harm from AI slop. That's a concrete, live failure mode. Security teams could waste enormous time patching something that doesn't need patching, or worse, it could be used to create confusion around real vulnerabilities.
And it raises a harder question. How many other hallucinated vulnerabilities are quietly making it into databases, documentation, or internal security audits without anyone catching them? The CVE system works because it's trusted. Once that trust gets polluted, the whole thing gets harder to rely on.
Real alarm bell. Okay, shifting to Sam Altman, who had something notable to say today.
OpenAI's CEO publicly called on the industry to, quote, pace the rate of AI development. Those are his words. Now, this is the same person running the company arguably pushing hardest on the frontier, so the framing is interesting.
Right, there's obvious tension there. But the fact that Altman is using deceleration language, even rhetorically, matters. He shapes how regulators, investors, and other labs think about the conversation. If the loudest voice at the frontier is saying slow down, that gives political cover for safety legislation and could shift how much pressure other labs feel to race.
Whether it's sincere, strategic, or both, it's a signal worth tracking. Now, NVIDIA. They launched a synthetic video detector today, a tool specifically designed to distinguish AI-generated video from real footage.
NVIDIA is interesting here because they're primarily known as the company making the hardware that generates all this synthetic content. Now they're also building tools to detect it. That's not contradictory. It's actually smart positioning. But it does highlight how serious the provenance problem has gotten. Regulators in the EU and the US are pushing hard on synthetic media labeling, and NVIDIA clearly sees commercial value in being on the detection side of that equation.
A world where you need a dedicated video authenticity layer just to trust what you're watching is something. Last AI story. A startup called June raised $20 million in a pre-seed round. Pre-seed meaning before they even have a full product in market.
$20 million pre-seed is remarkable. Most pre-seeds are a few hundred thousand to maybe a couple million. This is reportedly one of the largest pre-seed raises on record.
And the backer is Mark Benioff, who built Salesforce into one of the most valuable software companies on earth. So he has strong opinions about enterprise software friction. June's pitch is essentially, enterprises want to use AI, but the deployment process is a mess. Integration, compliance, change management. June wants to solve that layer.
The bet is that the bottleneck isn't the models anymore. It's getting the models to actually work inside real organizations. If Benioff believes that's a massive market, that's not a trivial endorsement.
All right, that's the news. Let's do the story behind.
The story behind. Salesforce. The company that bet software as we know it is over and then built the playbook that every SaaS company since has copied.
Let's go back to 1999. Mark Benioff is 34 years old. A rising star at Oracle, where he's worked for 13 years. He's done well there, made money, but he's become convinced of something radical, that the traditional model of enterprise software, where a company buys expensive licenses, installs the software on their own servers, and manages it forever, is fundamentally broken.
And at the time, that was the entire industry. SAP, Oracle, Siebel Systems, these were massive, dominant companies. Siebel, in particular, owned CRM, Customer Relationship Management Software. Their product cost a fortune, took months to implement, and required armies of IT staff to maintain.
Benioff's insight was, what if software was just a service you subscribed to over the internet? No installation, no maintenance, you just log in and it works. He called it the end of software. He founded Salesforce in February 1999 with Parker Harris, Dave Mollenhoff, and Frank Dominguez, Parker Harris being the technical co-founder who built the original product.
And they were scrappy. They famously rented a small apartment in San Francisco, not even a real office at first. The early team coded the first version of what would become Salesforce CRM in that apartment. The whole philosophy was simple, fast, no software to install, subscription pricing. Revolutionary for enterprise in 1999.
Benioff also had a genius for marketing provocation. He organized fake protests outside Siebel's conferences, hired actors carrying signs that said, "The end of software," to generate press and position Salesforce as a movement, not just a product. It was guerrilla marketing before anyone called it that.
They launched publicly in 2000, right as the dot-com bubble was collapsing. Almost every other internet startup was dying. Salesforce survived partly because their model was subscription-based, recurring revenue, which meant they weren't dependent on advertising dollars evaporating overnight.
They also had early customer wins that validated the model. Small and mid-sized businesses loved the fact that they could get enterprise-grade CRM without enterprise-grade implementation costs. Growth was steady. Then in 2004, Salesforce went public. The IPO raised over $100 million, and suddenly the company had resources to expand.
But the real pivots came after that. Benioff kept expanding the definition of what Salesforce was.
In 2006, they launched AppExchange, essentially an app store for business software built on top of Salesforce. That was huge. It turned Salesforce from a product into a platform. Third-party developers could build on it, which created an ecosystem and made Salesforce stickier inside every customer.
Then, in 2016, they made a move that defined the next decade. They acquired Demandware for about $1.6 billion, getting into e-commerce. Then MuleSoft in 2018 for around $6.5 billion, giving them integration infrastructure. And in 2019, Tableau for roughly $15.5 billion, one of the largest pure software acquisitions ever at the time.
Each acquisition was Benioff saying, "We're not a CRM company anymore. We're an enterprise cloud platform." And the market rewarded that. Revenue went from about $50 million in fiscal 2001 to crossing $1 billion in fiscal 2009, and then accelerating dramatically from there.
The most turbulent stretch came around 2022 and 2023. After a pandemic-era hiring boom, Salesforce announced layoffs of around 10% of its workforce, roughly 8,000 people, as growth slowed and activist investors started circling. Elliott Management, Starboard Value, major hedge funds pushing for margin improvement and leadership accountability.
Co-CEO Bret Taylor, who had been seen as a potential successor to Benioff, stepped down in late 2022. There was a real question about the company's strategic direction. But Benioff doubled down, cut costs, improved margins, and then pivoted hard into AI, launching what they call Agentforce, their platform for deploying autonomous AI agents inside enterprise workflows.
And that brings us to today. Salesforce is a company with annual revenue well above $30 billion, still led by Benioff, and now positioning itself as the enterprise AI agent platform. The Mark Benioff who backed June, that startup we mentioned earlier, is the same person who spent 25 years proving that the way enterprises buy and use software can be reinvented.
From a San Francisco apartment in 1999 with four people and a provocative slogan, to one of the most valuable software companies on earth, the end of software turned out to be the beginning of something much bigger.
That's the story behind Salesforce. Thanks for listening to Tech and AI Daily. We'll see you tomorrow.